Slavery in New England by Miss Sedgwick. Narrated by Christine Dahl. Mum Bet's character was composed of few but strong elements. Action was the law of her nature, and conscious of superiority to all around her, she felt servitude intolerable. It was not the work. Work was play to her. Her power of execution was marvelous. Nor was it awe of her kind master, or fear of her despotic mistress, but it was the galling of the harness, the irresistible longing for liberty. I have heard her say, with an emphatic shake of the head peculiar to her, any time while I was a slave, if 1 minute's freedom had been offered to me, and I had been told I must die at the end of that minute, I would have taken it, just to stand 1 minute on God's earth, a free woman, I would. It was soon after the close of the Revolutionary War that she chanced at the village meeting house in Sheffield to hear the Declaration of Independence read. She went the next day to the office of Mr. Theodore Sedgwick, then in the beginning of his honorable political and legal career. "Sir," said she, "I heard that paper read yesterday that says all men are born equal and that every man has a right to freedom. I am not a dumb critter. Won't the law give me my freedom?" I can imagine her upright form as she stood dilating with her fresh hope based on the declaration of an intrinsic, inalienable right. Such a resolve as hers is like God's messengers, wind, snow, and hail, irresistible. Her application was made to one who had generosity as well as intelligence to meet it. Mr. Sedgwick immediately instituted a suit in behalf of the extraordinary plaintiff. A decree was obtained in her favor. It was the first practical construction in Massachusetts of the declaration which had been to the black race a constitutional abstraction, and on this decision was based the freedom of the few slaves remaining in Massachusetts. Mum Bet immediately transferred herself to the service of her champion, if service that could be called, which was quite as much rule as service. She was, in truth, a sort of nurse gouvernante in his house, an anomalous office in our land. The children under her government regarded it, as the Jews did theirs, as a theocracy, and if a divine right were founded upon such ability and fidelity as hers, there would be no revolutions. Wider abuses make rebels. Soon after the close of the war, there was some resistance to the administration of the newly organized state government in Massachusetts. Instead of the exemption from taxation which the ignorant had expected, a heavy imposition was necessarily laid upon them. And instead of the license they had hoped from liberty, they found themselves fenced in by legal restraints. The jackades banded together. Dishonest men misled honest ones. The government was embarrassed. The courts were interrupted, and disorder prevailed throughout the western counties. A man named Shea was the leader. The rising has been dignified as Shea's War. There were some skirmishing and one or two encounters called battles, but with the exception of a few wounds and 3 or 4 deaths, it was a bloodless contest, chiefly mischievous for the fright it gave the women, and the licensed forays of the dishonest and idle who joined the insurgents. Those who had fancied that equality of rights and privileges would make equality of condition, that the mountains and molehills of gentle descent, education, and fortune would all sink before the proclamation of a republic to one level, were grievously disappointed. And the old war was waged that began with the revolt in heaven and has been continued down to our day of socialism. The gentlemen were called the ruffled shirts, and they were made prisoners wherever the insurgents could lay hands upon them. Their houses were invaded, and their movable property unceremoniously seized by those who might made their right.